Welcome to Double Portion Inheritance with Maria Marola, brought to you by DoublePortionInheritance.com. Since 1981, Maria heard the call of Yahuwah to become a watchman to the house of Yisrael and to those within the traditional Christian church. She was instructed to warn them against the false doctrines and pagan traditions of men. After 25 years of studying Scripture, the word of Yahuwah came to Maria again in 2007 as she was called out of the corporate world to become a full-time intercessor and prophetic teacher. The name of the ministry, Double Portion Inheritance, was given to her after she received the revelation of the two houses of Yisrael from Ezekiel 37:16. The mission of this ministry is to bring together the stick of Judah and the stick of Joseph for the return of the Messiah, Yahushua. And now, Maria Marola.
Hello, Mishpoka, friends, family, and Messiah. Today is April 15th, 2016, and I'm going to be talking about the Messiah seen in two Passovers. Well, first of all, there was the original Passover in the book of Exodus, and there was the Passover that our Messiah fulfilled in the Brit Hadashah, or the Renewed Covenant Scriptures. And I know there's a few differences between both of these Passovers. However, my aim in this study is to point out many of the similarities between the first Passover at the Exodus and Messiah's fulfillment as the Passover lamb. Before we begin this study, it is important to first understand that the calendar date changes at sundown and not at midnight. You see, beloved, it was in 1582 that Pope Gregory decreed that the date should change at midnight and no longer at sundown, thus fulfilling one of the prophecies about the beast in Daniel 7:23 through 25 as the fourth kingdom on the earth and the one who changes times and seasons. At the creation in Genesis 1:5, we read, "And the evening and the morning were the first day." Hence, the calendar date begins at evening. The Hebrew word evening is Ereb, which means dusk, and this means before it grows completely dark. From sunset to sunset is a complete 24-hour cycle. Our Messiah declared that there are only 12 hours in the day, but he was referring to the period of daylight called Yom in Hebrew. The word Yom means to be hot. It means from sunrise to sunset or from one sunset to another. Thus, there is the Yom, or the day, which describes the 12 hours of daylight, and there is the Yom, or the calendar date, which describes the combined day and night hours from sunset to sunset. The scriptural new year called Rosh Hashanah is to begin in the Hebrew month called Abib. In modern Hebrew, it is Aviv, but there is no V sound in ancient Hebrew. Abib in Hebrew letters is Aleph Bet Yod Bet. Modern Hebrew has added an additional vet sound to the letter Bet, which is equivalent to the English letter B. Interestingly, the word Abib paints a prophetic picture in the Paleopictograph letters, and you can see the characters if you go to my website and download the ebook entitled Messiah Seen in Two Passovers. You will see the illustration that I've provided there. From right to left, you'll be able to see the letters He, Aleph, Bet, Yod, Bet. The first letter, the He, is used in this word as the word ha. Ha in Hebrew means the in English. So it is saying in the month of the Abib. The Hebrew letter he also means the breath or the spirit. The Hebrew letter aleph means the head of the ox or the red heifer, the strong leader or the father. The letter bet means the house, and the letter yod means the arm. Well, first of all, we have the spirit of Yahuwah represented by the He, and then the Aleph is the strong leader, who is the Heavenly Father. There are two letters Bet because there are two houses of Israel, as we read in Isaiah 8:14. the house of Israel was called my firstborn son in Exodus 4:22. And there were also some Egyptians who joined Israel, and they left Egypt along with them. The Egyptians who left with Israel were called strangers that sojourn among you, as we read in Exodus 12:49. In Hebrew, they are called ger toshab, which means a resident stranger. It means that any stranger or foreigner could choose to sojourn with Israel, and they would be allowed to inherit the same promises with Israel, as well as land to dwell in. We read this in Ezekiel 47:22 through 23. Exodus 12:49 commands that the stranger who sojourns with Israel must keep the same Torah or the same law as does Israel. Now, the message of this term, Ha'abib, or the Abib, can therefore be read as follows. The spirit of Yahuwah, represented by the He, the strong leader and the father of Israel, represented by the Aleph, has brought both houses of Israel, Bet and Bet, out of Egypt with a strong hand, Yod. So there you have it. Each of these letters carries a prophetic picture, and even the month Abib paints this picture. So let's read these scriptures where Yahuwah instituted the new calendar at the time of the Exodus. It's in Shemot or Exodus 12:1. And Yahuwah spoke unto Moshe and Aharon in the land of Mitzrayim, or Egypt, saying, this month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. And then in the next chapter, in Shemot, or Exodus 13:3, it says, and Moshe said unto the people, remember this day in which you came out from Mitzrayim, or Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by strength of hand, Yahuwah brought you out from this place. There shall no leavened bread be eaten. And then in Shemot or Exodus 13:4, it says, this day came you out in the month Abib. The first Passover in Egypt took place at sundown on the 13th of Abib, or what we call Nisan in modern day Judaism. And this was just before the sun went down, and then it became the 14th of Abib, or Nisan, as soon as the sun went down. This was the night when the nation of Israel slaughtered a lamb for each household, and then they applied the blood to the doorposts of their homes as they were commanded. They ate the Passover lamb with unleavened bread in Egypt the night before their departure. And we read this in Exodus 12:3-23. This supper that they partook of was to betroth Israel to Yahuwah as his bride. We read this in Exodus 6:7, Exodus 19:5, and also Exodus 24:7. On this selfsame night, the 13th of Abib, our Messiah ate the Passover lamb with his disciples with unleavened bread. It was the third night of the week, what we call Tuesday on our Western calendar, at the beginning of the 14th of Abib, after sundown in 30, the common era. We read in Mark 14:12-18, Matthew 26:17-23, Luke 22:9-15. This supper was to betroth Israel, the bride of Messiah, back to himself again, as he prophesied in Hosea 2:19-20. Now, how can we be certain that our Messiah's Passover meal with his disciples began at sundown on the 13th of Abib? Well, in Leviticus 23:27-32, there is a precedence on how to observe a 24-hour calendar date. We are first told in verse 27 that the Day of Atonement, or Yom Kippur, is to be observed on the 10th day of the 7th month. But in verse 32, we read, in the 9th day of the month, at evening, from evening unto evening, shall you celebrate your Sabbath. Now, even though Yom Kippur is to begin on the 10th day of the month, on the evening of the 9th day of the month is when the sun goes down bringing us into the 10th day of the month. This is how we know that the 14th of Abib is preceded by the evening of the 13th of Abib, just before the sun goes down. And so Passover is the same as Yom Kippur. It's from evening unto evening. This is why in Hebrew it says that we are to kill the lamb between the two evenings. In Hebrew, it's Ben Ha'areb, and we'll talk more about that later on in this study. Now, I want to bring out another parallel between the first Passover in Egypt and Messiah's Passover. Israel placed shoes on their feet as they were commanded, and our Messiah washed his disciples' feet. Now, beloved, you must ask yourself, what is the significance of feet in prophecy? Why all this talk about feet? Well, the first mention of feet as a prophetic allegory is in Genesis 3:15 in the prophecy of the seed of the woman. In Bereshit or Genesis 3:15, it says, "And I will put enmity," that word enmity means hatred. He says, "I will put enmity between you," meaning the serpent, "and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. It shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel." Now, in this prophecy, Yahuwah was telling the devil, the serpent, that there would be hatred between the woman, which is Eve and her descendants, and the devil's offspring. The woman's descendants, Israel, would bruise or crush the head or the authority of the devil, and the devil would bruise or crush the heel or the inheritance. Hence, the feet represent the inheritance. Now, how can we be certain that feet symbolize inheritance in prophecy? Well, here's how we know. The second mention of the word heel is where Rebekah was told that she had twins in her womb. In Genesis 25:22-23, she was told that the older twin would serve the younger twin, as the younger one, Jacob, would grab the heel of the older son, Esau. Let's read it. It's in Bereshit or Genesis 25:26. It says, "And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel. And his name was called Jacob or Jacob, and Yitzhak or Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them." In Genesis 25:33-34, we read the rest of the account, and we see that Esau sold his birthright or his inheritance to his brother Jacob for a bowl of stew. It is from this account that we begin to understand the significance of feet in prophecy. The name Jacob or Jacob in Hebrew literally means heel grabber. In other words, he is the one who grabbed the birthright. In Exodus 12:11, Yahuwah commanded Israel to place shoes on their feet to be ready to leave Egypt that night of the Exodus. In Joshua 1:3, Israel was given a promise that wherever their foot shall tread, they would be given that land as their inheritance. Our Messiah washed the feet of his disciples the night after the Passover supper, as we read in John 13:12. Feet also represent those who bring good news. As we read in Isaiah 52:7, it says, "How lovely are the feet of them which bring good news." We read this passage of Romans 10:15 also, of those who have brought good news, and they are told that they have beautiful feet because their feet carry the good news. The same thing is in Ephesians 6:15. In Luke 15:22, when the prodigal son returned back to his father's house, he was given shoes on his feet as part of his inheritance. Thus we can see that our Messiah washed his disciples' feet to show that he was cleansing his inheritance, his bride. Now, here's another parallel that I would like to bring out. Israel placed the lamb's blood on two side posts of the door, and the door placed his own blood on two houses of Israel. You see, the blood of the lamb was placed on the two side posts of the door, symbolic of two houses of Israel. We read that also in Isaiah 8:14. They were commanded to strike the blood of the lamb on two side posts and the upper doorpost in Exodus 12:7. The upper post represents our Messiah, who is the head of the body. Yahuwah established both houses of Israel. The firstborn sons of Israel, symbolized by Judah, and the Egyptians who sojourned among them were grafted into Israel, and they are symbolic of Ephraim, who was born in Egypt. The Passover was a betrothal. It was an engagement between Israel and Yahuwah. The blood of the Lamb sealed this covenant with them. This was still on the 14th of Abib. At our Messiah's Passover, his own blood was placed on the two houses of Israel, as we read in Ephesians 2:15. Yahushua Mashiach's blood covenant was symbolized by the wine when he declared, "This is the blood of the New Testament shed for many for the remission of sins." Now, I realize that your King James Bible says New Testament. However, in Hebrew, it should be, "This is the blood of the Brit Hadashah shed for many for the remission of sins." Now, this term Brit Hadashah means circumcision renewed. We read this in Matthew 26:28, where Messiah declared that the wine he was drinking at the Passover meal was symbolic of the blood of the renewed covenant. And then the night before he was sacrificed on the tree, he prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane, and Luke 22:44 tells us that he sweat drops of blood. Our Messiah came to restore both houses of Israel, and this Passover was his betrothal, his engagement to his bride. This was still on the 14th of Abib. Now, here is another parallel. The firstborn Egyptians were smitten instead of Israel, and then the shepherd was smitten instead of Israel. You see, in Exodus 12:12, Yahuwah said he would smite all the firstborn of the Egyptians. The firstborn sons of the Egyptians were symbolic of sin, and they would be smitten for the firstborn sons of Israel. This was still on the 14th of Abib. Moshe and Aharon, that would be Moses and Aaron, they did not go to Pharaoh to negotiate their departure until the following morning, as they were commanded in Exodus 12:22. "None of you shall go out at the door of his house until the morning." Later on in history, Yahuwah prophesied that he would smite the shepherd who is our Messiah. Yahushua repeated this prophecy from Zechariah 13:7 on the night of his arrest. He said, "I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad." That was in Matthew 26:31. Yahushua is that shepherd who would be smitten for sinners to redeem the firstborn sons of Israel. This was still on the 14th of Abib. Messiah and his disciples did not leave the house of Jerusalem until the next morning, when they followed him to the place of execution, which was outside of the city. In Exodus 12:22, it says, "None of you shall go out at the door of his house until the morning." Well, the house of Judah was residing in Jerusalem at the time of our Messiah's ministry. Therefore, the commandment not to go out of the house meant the city of Jerusalem, not their individual homes. In Exodus 12:22, the reason why Israel was commanded not to go out of their house is because the angel of death was passing over Egypt to smite the firstborn. The homes of the Israelites were protected, however, by the blood of the Lamb, hence the death angel could not touch them. Similarly, at the time of Messiah's Passover, the blood of the Lamb was upon all those who dwelled in Jerusalem, for they were all observing the Passover that night in their homes. Now, moving forward, after the Exodus, Israel was commanded to slaughter the Passover lamb only in Jerusalem, where he has chosen to place his name. There was no longer a need to slaughter a lamb in Egypt after the Exodus. Therefore, there was no reason to stay within the individual homes in Jerusalem on the night of our Messiah's Passover meal with his disciples. The Torah commands that the lamb be slaughtered in the place where Yahuwah has chosen to place his name. Let's read it. It's in Devarim or Deuteronomy 16:2. It says, "You shall therefore sacrifice the Passover unto Yahuwah your Elohim of the flock and the herd in the place which Yahuwah shall choose to place his name there. In Debarim or Deuteronomy 16:6, it says, "But at the place which Yahweh, your Elohim, shall choose to place his name in, there shall you sacrifice the Passover at evening, at the going down of the sun, at the season that you came forth out of Mitzrayim," or Egypt. Now, what is interesting is that many believed on the name of Yahushua during the season of Passover. And we read this in Yehuchanan or John 2:23. It says, "Now when he was in Yerushalayim," or Jerusalem, "at the Passover," or the Pesach, "in the feast day, many believed in his name when they saw the miracles which he did." So let's bring out another parallel. Egypt's firstborn were smitten, and the firstborn of the house of Judah was smitten. You see, because Pharaoh forced the people of Israel into slavery, judgment from Yahweh came over Egypt and smote all the firstborn in their land. Let's read in Shemot or Exodus 3:20. It says, "And I will stretch out my hand and smite Mitzrayim," or Egypt, "with all my wonders, which I will do in the midst thereof, and after that he will let you go." Later on in 1 Kings 12, King Solomon placed Israel into slavery by taxing them heavily to build heathen temples for his many wives. This ultimately led the house of Israel to depart from the house of Judah. The tribe of Yehuda, or Judah, was commissioned to hold the scepter to rule, and to be the lawgivers over the other tribes. We read that in Genesis 49:10 and also in Romans 3:1 through 2. Thus, they were called the shepherds of Israel by the prophets. Yahweh pronounced judgment to these shepherds because they did not rule justly over the other tribes. Now let's read in Zechariah 10:3. He said, "My anger was kindled against the shepherds, and I punished the goats. For Yahweh of hosts has visited his flock, the house of Yehuda," or Judah, "and has made them as his goodly horse in the battle." And then in Zechariah 13:7, it says, "Awake, O sword, against my shepherd, and against the man that is my fellow, says Yahuwah of hosts. Smite the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered, and I will turn my hand upon the little ones." Now, one of the reasons why our Messiah had to be born into the house of Judah is because he came to bear their sins and to display for them what it means to be the good shepherd of Israel. He drew a contrast between the hirelings, who are only shepherds for financial gain, and the good shepherd, who lays down his life for the sheep, as described in John 10:11-13. In the same way that Yahweh judged Egypt for placing his people Israel into hard bondage, so he would do the same thing for the house of Judah for placing heavy burdens on the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Solomon placed heavy tax burdens on the people and the corrupt religious leaders in Messiah's day. They also placed heavy burdens on the people in the form of man-made traditions. Now, I'm going to take a short commercial break, so don't go away.
Hello, friends and supporters of Double Portion Inheritance Ministries. Back in 2002, Maria Merola had a series of prophetic dreams which prompted her to begin journaling and blogging. Since that time, Maria has written over 200 ebooks on various topics related to the Messiah, the Torah, the Feasts of Yahuwah, the Epistles of Paul, and end-time prophecy from the books of Revelation, Daniel, and Ezekiel. Maria does not sell her books because the revelations that she receives from the Spirit of Yahuwah are not for profit. However, Maria does accept donations to her ministry based on what is written in Torah and also in 1 Corinthians 9:9. "You shall not muzzle the ox while he treads out the grain." Therefore, Maria offers 65 of her ebooks on a flash drive as a free gift for a minimum donation of $70. Also included on the flash drive is a Passover Haggadah in English for beginners, Maria's MP3 song entitled "Children of Promise," and several spiritual warfare prayers. Two versions of the flash drive are available. Maria offers a royal blue flash drive bracelet with the name of Yahuwah in English as well as Paleo-Hebrew letters. Also available is a flash drive that can be worn around the neck with a lanyard. Simply visit the website doubleportioninheritance.com and go to the PayPal button to make your donation. Otherwise, you can mail a check to Maria Marola, P.O. Box 231161, Sacramento, California 95823. Maria is also available for speaking engagements at your conference, home fellowship, or congregation. If you would like to host Maria, write to her at doubleportioninheritance@gmail.com.
Okay, we're back from the break now, and I've been explaining the parallel from the Exodus Passover to Messiah's fulfillment as the Passover lamb. And before the break, I was explaining that Egypt's firstborn were smitten because they kept Yahuwah's people, Israel, in bondage. Now, during the days of our Messiah's ministry, the firstborn of the house of Judah was smitten. First, it was Judas, whose name means Judah or Yehuda, and he represents the house of Judah. He was smitten, meaning that he killed himself because he recognized that he betrayed the Messiah. In the same way that Yahuwah judged Egypt for placing his people Israel into hard bondage and slavery, so he would do the same thing for the house of Yehuda or Judah for placing heavy burdens on the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Solomon also placed heavy tax burdens on the people, and the corrupt religious leaders placed heavy burdens on the people in the form of man-made traditions, extra rules and regulations. And so the house of Judah deserved to be smitten for the harsh way that they treated the lost sheep of the house of Israel. But our Messiah was ready to be smitten on behalf of Judah. If only the house of Judah had accepted him as their Messiah, they would not have been smitten during the Roman siege 40 years later. Now, before the break, I read to you Matityahu or Matthew 26:31 that says, "Then said Yahushua unto them, All you shall be offended because of me this night, for it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad." And as I've already explained in the Tanakh, or the Old Testament, when we see this word smite, it's number 5221 in the Strong's Hebrew Concordance, Nakah, and it means to kill, to slaughter, to murder, to punish, to slay. This word is used several times in the book of Exodus. In Shemot, or Exodus 7:17, it says, "Thus says Yahuwah, in this you shall know that I am Yahuwah, because I will smite with the rod that is in my hand upon the waters which are in the river, and they shall be turned to blood." And then in Exodus 8:2, it says, "And if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will smite all your borders with frogs." Obviously, he was saying this to Pharaoh. And then in Exodus 8:16, "And Yahuwah said unto Moshe, Say unto Aharon," or Aaron, "stretch out your rod and smite the dust of the land, that it may become lice throughout all the land of Mitzrayim," or Egypt. Exodus 9:15 says, "For now I will stretch out my hand, that I may smite you and your people with pestilence, and you shall be cut off from the earth." In Exodus 12:12 it says, "For I will pass through the land of Mitzrayim," or Egypt, "this night, and will smite all the firstborn in the land of Mitzrayim," or Egypt, "both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt, I will execute judgment. I am Yahuwah." You see, Exodus 12:12 parallels to the night that Yehuda, or Judas, realized that he had betrayed innocent blood and he hung himself, thus smiting himself. It also parallels to our Messiah, who said that he was the shepherd who would be smitten for the sins of Judah. The disciple Judas is named Judah, or Yehuda in Hebrew, and he symbolizes the house of Judah, for they, as a nation, would betray their Messiah when they shouted, "Crucify him!" This was in John 19:10. Thus, at the first Passover, Yahuwah judged Egypt for keeping his people in bondage, but at our Messiah's Passover, Yahuwah judged the house of Judah for not allowing the other lost sheep to return to the covenant and also for rejecting his sacrifice for them. In Exodus 12:13, it says, "And the blood shall be to you for a token upon the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you when I smite the land of Mitzrayim," or Egypt. In Exodus 12:29, it says, "And it came to pass that at midnight Yahuwah smote all the firstborn in the land of Mitzrayim," or Egypt, "from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on his throne unto the firstborn of the captive that was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the cattle." You see, when Israel accepted the blood of the lamb as their atonement or their covering, they were saved from death. But if any of them had left their homes that night, they would have died. And similarly, when Judas betrayed our Messiah to the Sanhedrin, he essentially left the house. Or in other words, he left the protection of his Savior. And as a result, the death angel took him. The Egyptians also hung themselves, metaphorically speaking, when they chased after the Israelites and they were then drowned in the Red Sea. In the same way that Judas died in the field of blood, the Egyptians were buried in the Red Sea, which is symbolic of blood. The Hebrew term for Red Sea is Yom Suf. This term, Yom Suf, the word red, the word is suf, and it is number 5488. It means a reed or a papyrus. It means a red weed. You see, the reeds were red in color. And the word for sea is yom. It is number 3220, meaning to roar, a sea, a large body of water. So the term Red Sea or Yom Suf means the Sea of Reeds. From this, we see the parallel that judgment from Yahuwah came to the house of Judah that was typified in the disciple who betrayed him. And his name was Judas, which means Judah. He represents the older son, the firstborn in the story of the prodigal. The firstborn of the two houses of Israel was being judged that night because, as a nation, they killed their Messiah. And the person whose name is after this tribe, Yehuda or Judas, was being used to illustrate this judgment that was going to come to them 40 years later in the Roman siege. But our Messiah took the cup of wrath, the second cup for them, as a nation, to those from the house of Judah who would repent and later on accept his sacrifice. On the night after he betrayed Messiah, Judas declared, "I have sinned in that I have betrayed the innocent blood." This is in Matthew 27:4. Judas hung himself in what is called the field of blood, Matthew 27:8. And so from this we see the field of blood is a lot like the Red Sea. The Egyptians were buried in the Red Sea. Similarly, Judas was buried in the field of blood. Now let's talk about another parallel that we can see from the Exodus Passover to Messiah's Passover in the New Testament or the Brit Hadashah. Pharaoh released the firstborn son, Israel, on Passover. And Pontius Pilate released the firstborn son, Israel, on Passover. The firstborn sons of Yahuwah, Israel, were released out of Egypt that night because Yahuwah smote Egypt's firstborn in exchange for his firstborn son, Israel. Let's read it in Shemot or Exodus 12:30. It says, "And Pharaoh rose up in the night, he and all his servants, and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead." The next verse, Shemot or Exodus 12:31, says, "And he called for Moshe," or Moses, "and Aharon," or Aaron, "by night, and said, Rise up and get you forth from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve Yahuwah as you have said." Now, this was still on the 14th of Abib, but they did not actually leave Egypt until the 15th of Abib, as we read in Numbers 33:3-4. It says, "And they departed from Ramses in the first month on the 15th day of the first month on the morrow after the Passover. The children of Israel went out with a high hand in the sight of all the Egyptians. For the Egyptians buried all their firstborn, which Yahuwah had smitten among them, upon their gods. Also Yahuwah executed the judgments." Now I want to explain what is meant by a high hand. We just read in Numbers 33:3, it says, "And they departed from Ramses in the first month on the 15th day of the first month, on the morrow after the Pesach, or Passover, the children of Israel went out with a high hand in the sight of all the Egyptians." Well, that term, high hand, means that Yahuwah had exalted them in front of the Egyptians, and now they literally had the upper hand. That is what is meant by they left with a high hand. In Exodus 12:13, it says, "And the blood shall be to you for a token upon the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you." Now, from this phrase, "I will pass over you," we looked that up in Hebrew, "I will pass," and it's number 6452, Pasach, which means to skip over, to spare, to leap, or to dance. And then the word "over" is number 5921, "al." "Al" means over or above. And so we can see that Yahuwah danced over Israel. He leaped over them and he rejoiced over them as he delivered them. In the same way that Pharaoh released Israel from Egypt on Passover, Pontius Pilate released Barabbas also on Passover, who represents the firstborn sons of Israel. You see, Barabbas, his name is Bar-Abba in Aramaic, which means son of the father. Yahuwah smote the shepherd, the Messiah, who became the scapegoat for the firstborn sons of Israel. Pontius Pilate then released Barabbas in the same way that Pharaoh released Israel that same night on the 14th of Abib. Let's read it. It's in Matityahu or Matthew 27:17. It says, "Therefore, when they were gathered together, Pilate said unto them, Whom will you that I release unto you, Barabbas or Yahushua, which is Mashiach or Messiah?" You see, our Messiah represented the firstborn sons of Egypt, the scapegoat, who died in place of the firstborn sons of Israel. Our Messiah represented the firstborn sons of Egypt, the scapegoat, who died in place of the firstborn sons of Israel. The innocent children of the firstborn of Egypt had to die in order to release the firstborn of Israel. The word scapegoat comes from the Hebrew Azazel. It's number H5799 in the concordance, and it's in Leviticus 16:8, and it means goat of departure. Yahushua was now about to take the place for the guilty sinners. This word scapegoat means the innocent party who takes the place of the guilty party. Barabbas was being released to symbolize that all of Israel was being released from their debt of sin, and our Messiah was taking their place. Messiah died on the 14th of Abib, and he was buried just before the sun went down on the 15th of Abib. In the same way that Israel departed from Egypt, our Messiah departed to the place of the skull, and then his spirit departed when he died. And he said to the Father in heaven, "Into your hands I commit my spirit." Now, I want to bring out another parallel. Pharaoh granted Israel their request, and Pontius Pilate granted Jerusalem their request. You see, Pharaoh finally gave the people of Israel what they wanted when they cried, "Let us go." And so he sent for Moses and Aaron to take the people out of Egypt. Let's read it. It's in Shemot or Exodus 12:32. And Pharaoh said, Also, take your flocks and your herds as you have said, and be gone, and bless me also. Pharaoh recognized that the blood of the innocent lambs had protected Israel that night before, and Yah took the firstborn sons of Egypt. Pharaoh was about to release the children of Israel from Egypt, recognizing that the blood of the innocent Egyptian children, as well as the blood of the lambs, was shed in order to free the Israelites. This was still the 14th of Abib, but they did not leave until the 15th of Abib. Pilate finally gave the people of Israel what they wanted when they cried, "Let Barabbas go." And so he gave them Barabbas. The people of Judah cried out, "Crucify him! Let his blood be upon us." Pilate then washed his hands of innocent blood as he recognized that Messiah was the innocent scapegoat for the house of Yehuda or Judah, for they were shouting, "Let his blood be upon us." Let's read it in Matityahu or Matthew 27:24. When Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but rather atonement was made, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, "I am innocent of the blood of this just person. See you to it." Now this word tumult in the Greek means an uproar or a disturbance. And so he recognized that the people were not going to relent, and so he gave them what they want. In Matthew 27:25, "Then answered all the people and said, 'His blood be on us and our children.'" In the next verse, Matthew 27:26, "Then released he Bar-Abba," or Barabbas, "unto them. And when he had scourged Yahushua, he delivered him to be crucified." Pilate was about to release the guilty party, Barabbas, who was symbolic of the nation of Israel, and he was about to execute the Messiah in his place. This was still on the 14th of Abib. Okay, let's take a look at another parallel. The Egyptians were destroyed in the Red Sea, and sin was destroyed by the red blood of the Lamb. You see, the Red Sea is symbolic of sin and bondage. Pharaoh and his Egyptian army were destroyed in the Red Sea, as we read in Exodus 15:4. This happened 3 days later on the 18th of Abib, as we are told that it was a 3 days journey from Egypt to the Red Sea. Israel ate the Passover lamb with unleavened bread before they left. They were led by a pillar of fire by night and a cloud by day, symbolic of the Ruach of Yahuwah. His spirit was manifested to them in a pillar of fire by night and a cloud by day. We read that in Exodus 13:21 through 22, Exodus 14:19, and Exodus 24. We also read it in Numbers 33:3-8. When they came to the Red Sea, this represented water baptism or immersion, mikvah. Israel crossed over from death to life, from bondage to freedom. The blood of the Egyptians paid for their freedom when they drowned in the water. There were three elements present at this event: the spirit, the water, and the blood. We read this in 1 John 5:8. It says that there are three that testify: the spirit, the water, and the blood. In the same way that Yahuwah destroyed the Egyptians in the Red Sea on the 18th of Abib, which was 3 days after Passover, he also destroyed sin through our Messiah's Passover sacrifice. He then resurrected 3 days later on the evening of the 17th of Abib, going into the 18th of Abib. These two events took place on what is called first fruits, as seen in Leviticus 23:10-11. "Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when you be come into the land which I give unto you, and shall reap the harvest thereof, you shall bring a sheaf, or an omer, of the first fruits of your harvest unto the priest." In verse 11, it says, "And he shall wave the sheaf, or the omer, before Yahuwah, to be accepted for you on the morrow after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it." Our Messiah acted as the Passover lamb, who shed his innocent blood to purchase our freedom. He also acted as the unleavened bread, because he had no sin or leaven in him. And his bread is his word, his life-sustaining nourishment for our spirit. And when he resurrected, he then became the firstborn from among the dead, a type of first fruits, when he offered up himself. He acted as the high priest Melchizedek, who offered up the righteous souls who were in the bosom of Abraham as his first fruits offering before the Father in heaven. We read this in Ephesians 4, 8 through 10. Now let's read the account here in Ephesians 4, 8 through 10. It says, "Wherefore," he says, "when he ascended up on high, he led captivity captive, and he gave gifts unto men. Now that he ascended, what is it but that he also descended first into the lower parts of the earth? He that descended is the same also that ascended up far above all heavens, that he might fill all things." And so we see there that when our Messiah resurrected, he went into this place called Abraham's bosom. We read about that in Luke 16. And I know some people seem to think that that's just a parable. However, I noticed a pattern that when he spoke in parables, he did not call out people by name. He would usually say there was a certain individual, but he wouldn't use names. However, in Luke 16, in the account of Lazarus and the rich man, he actually calls out Lazarus by name. He mentions Abraham by name, and he mentions Moses and the prophets by name. And so why would our Messiah lie and tell a fictitious story, but insert true life characters into the story if it was a fiction? This is how we know that Luke 16 is not merely a parable, although it can be applied as a parable, but it is a true account. So here, let's read it. In Luke 16, he says, verse 19, "There was a certain rich man which was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. And there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, which was laid at his gate full of sores, and desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores." So we can tell from this account that Lazarus was a Gentile, and the rich man represents the house of Judah, and Lazarus represents the Samaritans, the outcasts of Israel, the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Because in an earlier account, we see that there was a Canaanite woman who had a demon-possessed daughter, and she asked Yahushua to cast the demon out of her daughter. And at first he refused to do it because he said it's not right to give the bread that belongs to the children to the dogs. And her reply astonished him because she said, "Yes, master, but even the dogs get to eat the crumbs that fall from the children's table." And he was amazed, and he healed her daughter because of her great faith. Now, the term dog is used oftentimes in scripture as a metaphor for a Gentile. And here again, in this story that he's telling, he's using the dog to represent Lazarus, the poor beggar, because he desired to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. So the rich man obviously represents one of the house of Judah, and Lazarus represents the 10 lost tribes of the house of Israel who were exiled. And so if you continue to read this account, Luke 16:23, it says, "And in hell," that word hell is Hades in Greek, "in Hades he lift up his eyes, being in torments, and sees Abraham afar off, and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus, that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that you in your lifetime received your good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things. But now he is comforted, and you are tormented. And beside all this, between us and you, there is a great gulf fixed, so that they which would pass from here to you cannot, neither can they pass to us that would come from here. And he said, I pray you, therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house. For I have five brothers. And you see this number five is indicative of Torah. Anytime you see the number five, it's a prophetic picture of Torah. He says, for I have five brethren, that he may testify unto them, lest they also come into this place of torment. Abraham said unto him, they have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. And he said, no, Father Abraham, but if one went unto them from the dead, they will repent. And he said unto him, if they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rose from the dead. Here he's speaking about his own death and resurrection, and he's rebuking the house of Judah and saying to them, you won't even hear, even if one comes from the dead. He's referring to himself being risen from the dead in the future. He was letting them know, you won't even be persuaded, even if I come back from the dead. Well, we're out of time, so next week I'll pick up where we left off. May Yahuwah bless you and keep you. Yahuwah make his face shine upon you and be gracious unto you. Yahuwah lift up his countenance upon you and give you shalom.
We hope you enjoyed today's broadcast and that you are encouraged in your walk with Messiah through the teaching. To visit Maria's website and download the MP3 version of this teaching, visit DoublePortionInheritance.com. That's www.DoublePortionInheritance.com. This ministry is made possible through the prayers and support of listeners like you. If you would like to make a donation to Double Portion Inheritance, write to Maria Marola, P.O. Box 231161, Sacramento, California, 95823. That's P.O. Box 231161, Sacramento, California, 95823. Or via the PayPal donate button at DoublePortionInheritance.com. On behalf of Maria and all the ministry team at Double Portion Inheritance, may Yahuwah bless you.